Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, October 26, 2010, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. This week, our special guest is Dr. Carol Parrish, a distinguished author, mystic, teacher, counselor, and minister who is known around the world as a master teacher of teachers. A longtime friend of Lavendar's, Carol established Sancta Sophia Seminary at Sparrowhawk Village, from which hundreds of students have been taught, certified, and awarded master's and doctoral degrees. Her websites are www.sanctasophia.org and carolparrish.com, and that's CaroleParrish.com. And we're honored to have her on our show. Then Lavendar will explain how the recent 10-10-10 activation will affect this coming Pleiadian lineup in November. If you've never heard of Pleiadian lineup, the explanation is in the Vault of Knowledge on our main site, starseedhotline.com, under the heading Pleiadian Alignment. Later in the show, I'll give you a list of essential tools for success as a starseed, and I mean essential. Without your starseed tool belt, it's like trying to drive a car with bad fuel and flat tires. Afterwards, we welcome your comments or questions. Please be mindful of others who will also be waiting with questions. We'd like to thank Sierra for co-hosting in the chat room today for those who can't call in with questions. And I think the chat room may be a little delayed today. She was having a little problem getting online. So just hang in there. For those who can, the call-in number is 917-889-8292. And press 1 if you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. Before I introduce Carol and Lavendar, I'd like to mention that if you register for free here at Blog Talk Radio and click the little red heart on our podcast player or the word follow, you'll get an email notice when our next show is coming in case we don't know you yet. All of our past shows are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. If you're new to our show, you've missed a lot of chapters, but they're still available for you to catch up. Also, Starseed Radio Academy is now available on iTunes. You can download shows to go, and it's all free. It's a great way to catch up on chapters you may have missed when you're away from home. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of fascinating and necessary information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge, like Lavendar's Discovery of Star Markings, Solar Return, Your 10 Hours of Power, the Teton Reports, and Starseed Booby Traps, just to mention a few. It's a free internet classroom library for Starseed. We also have an archive of past teleconferences you can hear on our headline news page. Just click the scrolling banner on the main page, and it takes you to the headline news page. Once you're there, near the bottom of the page, you can also find the video slideshow where Lavendar tells the details about her discovery of star markings and the Pleiadian lineup, where she spent 2 days in the Great Pyramid with the Pleiadian ship overhead conducting a giant walk-in procedure, and it is a spellbinding story. You can see the pictures on our main site. Just go down the list of links on the left of any page and click Magical Moments Caught on Film. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com, and that's N-I-N-G. We'll be talking with Carol and Lavendar in just a moment, but first I'd also like to mention that Lavendar has written 2 books for Starseed, which are now available as e-books on our site. The first one, 50 Questions and Answers, is a transmission from the Antares Arcturus Midway Station, where she had the opportunity to ask 50 profound questions and be answered clearly and truthfully by Silovan, an ascended guardian of this galaxy. The second ebook, Quartz Crystals, A Celestial Point of View, is a comprehensive guide for the starseed use of crystals, including solar star dates for the next 10 years for charging crystals with galactic frequencies. These books are a must-read for starseed to understand the galactic big picture and your part in it. Dr. Parrish has also written many books, which we'll ask her to talk about. If you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. If you'd like to learn about the new device that disables unsupportive implants, relieves pain, and resets your energy, call our toll-free number or email lavendar@starseedhotline.com and make sure you spell it right. It's LAVANDAR at starseedhotline.com. Now, I would like to welcome my co-host, Lavendar, and Dr. Carol Parrish. Welcome, ladies.
Welcome to you.
Well, thank you. Lavendar, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am. So glad to have you here, Carol. What a privilege it is for me to be talking to you today and offering to our listeners your wisdom and the 30 years that you've really put into this wonderful work that you've been doing. And I would like to start out by saying that, you know, when I first met you years ago, I believe it was in Corpus Christi, you told me at that time that you were a walk-in, that you had, you know, lots of children, had divorced and moved to Tahlequah, Oklahoma to buy a mountain, and that you were going to build a metaphysical school. And you did just exactly that. You did exactly what you said you were going to do. And years later, when I saw you again, I was so proud to have found Sparrowhawk Village and go up and see this beautiful place that you've built. A lot of homes and the school and the library, the chapel, the healing center. I was just so proud. All my buttons were just popping right off. So I just wanted to open that with a story, Carol, of how I met you and how years later I had really seen that you kept your promise. You knew who you were, you knew your mission, and you did it. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, sometimes people think, oh, it'd be so easy if they knew what they were supposed to do. And I often laugh about that. I always think, you know, how many times in our life we say, well, I know I ought to do this, but here's what I'm going to do. But, and I know that I came up against many moments that I didn't know if I could do what I was supposed to do, but I had to hang in to get it done. Now, it's sort of the reward time of my life where I can enjoy it.
Well,
everybody, as they follow their path, meets those challenges, and I think most of them aren't well understood, aren't believed maybe, or seems the ideas seem incredible, but in the long run we can do it.
Well, but I think also you had some help from upstairs, and with the walk-in energy, in fact, if you would just walk us through your walk-in experience. Because we have a lot of listeners that are walk-ins, and some starseed that have walk-ins for partners, and some starseeds that have walk-ins for children. We have a lot of walk-ins that are listening tonight, and some of them, you know, they just need a little encouragement about how to handle themselves here on the planet. And if you would just give us, you know, a little bit of history about how it happened to you, I think that they would really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I was young. I was 23. And it was during the birth of my sixth child. And I got into trouble. The doctor gave me sodium pentothal. I had an allergic reaction. My lungs collapsed. And I found myself out of body, looking down, seeing myself down on the bed in the delivery room. And I thought to myself, if I'm down there and I'm up here, I must be dead. And about that time, you know, there was this whirling wind. And the wind sound was most predominant. It was like a whistle. and Whistling Wind, and I found myself rushing through a tunnel toward a light, and I came out into that light, and there wasn't a person there, it was a presence, and this presence seemed to just be everywhere with this strong light, not blinding, a comforting presence. And the first thing the voice said to me was, if you are, you always will be. And then I began to be aware of myself. This is where my story is hard to tell. There is that part of me that was young Carol and was being comforted, and then there was this other part of me that was the new part. And it was like I, the new part, stood behind young Carol, and this light just brought through her into me a memory of her life experience. And she was then cared for by two beings and taken gently away, somewhat like I think from my experience that when a person dies, the angelic beings take them into their care. And I found myself standing there in that light, and this being began to tell me what I was to do with my life and showed me a little flash, like a little booklet of pictures, and it was just flash, 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 and I saw different pictures of myself over the years, and I saw me with more children. I saw me with a collar around my neck, and I was a Roman Catholic, and I couldn't imagine me with a collar. I saw myself in robes in religious ceremonies. I saw myself teaching, talking publicly, which I had never done at that time. And as I saw these pictures, I just knew this was what I was supposed to do. And then, in due time, I sort of lost consciousness, and the next thing I knew, they were moving me in the hospital from a gurney back into a bed. And this was 1958, so they put an oxygen tent up. And I tried to tell the doctor, and I said, let me tell you about this light. And he patted my arm, and he said, you're just hallucinating. It's the medicines that you've had. And the priest was there to give the last rites. My husband was there. My parents were there. And I looked at everybody, and I kept trying to talk to them, and their eyes just closed to me. They just looked down. I knew they didn't believe anything I was trying to say. And I turned my face toward the wall, and big tears came, and I said to myself, how will I ever do what I'm supposed to do if no one will ever believe me?
Wow.
And, you know, it was the most helpless feeling at that time. And I was in the hospital for a few days, and then I went home. And then I had out-of-body experiences, but I didn't know what they were at the time. And I went back to the doctor. In those days, you went back for 6 weeks checkups. So I went back for a 6 weeks checkup, and I told the doctor, I tried to talk about this again. I tried to talk about what happened in the hospital. Tried to tell him that I told him I was coming apart, that I would be laying on the bed nursing the baby, and I'd be standing in the doorway at the same time, and I'd watch myself nurse the baby. And then I started thinking about it, I'd pop back together. And so he said, oh, well, I'm going to give you a prescription. This will stop that. And it was Valium, of course. And actually, because I had the tiny baby and I went home and I was breastfeeding, after I took one pill, I could not wake this child up. I could roll her around. She was just knocked out. And it scared me because I had a house full of little children. And I just took the pills and poured them down the toilet. And I've always been grateful that, you know, that that's what happened and that that's what I was able to do. But I've seen through my lifetime.
Hello, Carol?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
nope.
Hello?
Lavendar, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, Carol.
All right. No. Well, I've just seen during my lifetime many times something happening, and it's like that picture comes back into my mind. I was shown that that was the track I was supposed to be on. And I always felt like it was my particular master that guided me, and that I had a particular job, and this school was the job that was to be established. And then I was told to bring it to Oklahoma. I started it in Sarasota, Florida. And then my guidance moved me to Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got the message to come to Tahlequah? Was there some direct inspiration, or did they point to the map, or how did you find Tahlequah?
Well, I'd never been in Oklahoma, never knew anybody from Oklahoma. So it was on a early one morning, and I was doing my regular meditation, and all of a sudden it seemed like the whole wall in front of me was one large map of the United States. And this hand came down and went directly to Oklahoma in this northeast corner, and I saw the word Tahlequah. Only I didn't know what I didn't even know if it was a real word, really, because I'd never seen such a word. And I got up. I said, "Oh no, oh God, no!" It's exactly because my life was very wonderful. And I loved the school, and my husband was with the university there, and we had wonderful friends and lots of students, and I really didn't want to leave. So I got up and went to an atlas, and when I looked at this atlas of Oklahoma, there was Tahlequah on that map. And so, long story short, when I was through crying for a few days, my husband and I made an airline reservation to come to Oklahoma City, drove to Tahlequah, and he really came back two or three times without me because I was on tour, but he found the property, and he knew, and I flew out and affirmed that this really was where I thought we were supposed to be on this particular piece of land. So we moved out here and began bit by bit and step by step to put the spiritual community together. We had wonderful friends. We had about 8 or 9 of us that came out in the very original group to start this.
And how many community members do you have now living up there on the mountain?
We have about 100.
Okay.
And we have about 52 homes, and sometimes we have up to 100 guests. At our November conference, we always have a lot of guests and extra people. A lot of times we have classes and students that come in, from 10 to 25 at a time for different programs that are going on. But
so if a person wants to come and get some kind of degree from your school, tell us a little bit about what that encompasses and how long does it take them to get their degree.
Well, it is very personalized. And by that I mean if you already have a lot of classes and all background and a lot of study, it's going to take you less time. If you're brand new to the studies in a formal kind of way, it will take you more. But there's a number of basic classes. It's called our preparatory program, and it's more the basics, and they are the longest ones of the classes because they are as important as they are. And then we have a variety of specialty classes. So you work first to get a degree. First you want to get a certification as a practitioner, and that is like a lay minister's papers, because most places in the United States although it's not required, most places you want to be under the banner of ministry. And so you get this lay ministry papers first when you finish the foundation part. And then for 1 year, you work, at least a year, you work on the advanced classes and in doing services here and in your own home area. You're very busy becoming the role of the minister. You have to learn how to do things. And so we give you lots of opportunity to do that. We do service. Everybody does service in some kind of way. And so there's a process of getting the ordination papers. When you finish, we get what is called preparation for ministry, and then you're ordained. So you have a certificate from Sancta Sophia, a diploma, and you have a ordination certificate from the church. And at that point, many people, are really ready to do what they believe they're led to do. Other people want to go ahead and study some more, and they can work for a Master of Divinity or Theology, or they can work for a PhD in Religious Studies or in Spirituality. And we offer a number of courses so that you can specialize in the area that might seem to be your work. Theology or especially a doctor or master's in theology is good for writing or for teaching in certain areas and certain kinds of schools. The most common one for working with people would be what's called an MDiv. It's a Minister of Divinity. And people persons want that. They're really into spiritual mentoring. They're into the ritual and the sacraments. They're into teaching classes. And it's an adequate degree for working. It's the most common in all churches. And we live in an interesting time when we're sort of bridging between a traditional church structure and a more informal esoteric structure. And so a lot of people are coming across that bridge now. And so we want people to be able to be comfortable with somewhat of a traditional, at least understanding, even if they don't want to practice it that way. And we want people, our real goal is to educate them esoterically so they will know how metaphysical laws operate and what the practice is and what ancient wisdom teaches. And
that's wonderful.
I think ancient wisdom kind of sums it up and gives everybody more of an idea of how we got to where we are and how we know where we're going.
Great.
You know.
Well, Carol, there's a dormitory there, isn't there? How many students can live in the dormitory?
We call it a villa.
Okay.
It's a villa, and it's got 14 beds, and it's got a breakfast room and a family room.
Okay. Have other accommodations. Mm-hmm. You have apartments or houses for rent?
Yes. Some of the people that live in the village have built extra rooms and rent out small apartments or rent out a room or two.
Okay.
And students have one extra house. So we can really house in our student properties about 20 people.
Okay. I noticed when I first drove up there the word Sophia, and at that time, I believe the Da Vinci Code book had just come out, and the main character, there was a lady named Sophia, and I asked you about it at the time, and you told me that that name had been on that mountain for years before this book ever came out. Is that right?
That's correct. We've used Sophia, for many years. And with an understanding that when you use the concept of love wisdom, the Christ energy is the love energy, and Sophia is the wisdom energy. And The word Sophia actually means wisdom and was the Greek word in the scriptures was Sophia. But when it was translated into Latin and we were beginning to have the problem between masculine and feminine struggle that was going on, the word Sophia was translated wisdom, which is correct, but instead of being capitalized and honored, it was made into a little letter, and it was people read it like knowledge instead of really inspired wisdom, intuitive wisdom. And if it had been capitalized, we wouldn't have lost Sophia the way that we did.
Oh, goodness. Oh, wow. Well, I must say that I was there on Pleiadian lineup about 3 years ago, and that was in May, the middle of
mm-hmm.
And I was bringing to you a book called The Woman Pope, which mm-hmm. is the story of Pope Joan. And I stopped off at your chapel and walked in with my business partner, and the air was pink inside the chapel. And I thought, wow, look at this. But as I breathed in the pink air, and when I exhaled, my breath was blue. And, it shocked me at first, and my business partner just started sobbing, and I just kind of thought, oh, my goodness, we have a really strong presence here today. And I'll never forget that experience. It was on Pleiadian lineup. We were there on top of this mountain, just about ready to meet you and hand you this book. And I just knew that all of it was coming together as a crescendo of it, as an aha cosmic Sophia moment. I mean, I just knew that. And then, of course, we went in into your beautiful lavender purple office and sat down, and we started chatting about Pope Joan, and then you told me that you had an experience when you went to Rome and had heard about this story. Is that not true?
That is so. I had heard of the story way back in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I think I had seen an old book about Pope Joan, but I didn't know enough about it to know what to do with it. And so at that point, then later I went to Rome, and I did the city tour and so forth. And while we were on the city tour, we were going down a particular street, and the tour guide went over to the next street. And he said, we don't go the rest of the way down that street because that is the street where Pope Joan was a pope, and they called it this way, Pope John was revealed to be Pope Joan when she went into labor and began having a child. And he talked very openly. I'd never heard anybody talk about it openly like that. Didn't much know at that time just what he was talking about. So I was surprised at the way he talked. And then I was able to ask questions and find out a little bit more from hearsay from the other people in the tour around me. And so then I was very eager when you brought the book here of The Woman Pope, because it gave some more to the story.
Right.
But they do acknowledge that, at least that tour guide, while I was in Rome, did acknowledge that they were not to go down that street with the tour, that they had to move over to the next block and travel it because of the history of that particular avenue.
Well, I'd like to tell our listeners, the name of the book is The Woman Pope. It's by Nelson Clark, The Woman Pope by Nelson Clark, and it's a very fascinating book. And, of course, a screenplay has been written, and I'll never forget when the lightning struck above the motel where we were staying at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I just jumped out of bed and said, okay, I'll read it today. And it rained all day. I stayed in the room and read from front to cover the screenplay of Pope Joan, and I'll tell you what, it was just riveting, and I can't wait for this movie to be made. In some way, somehow, I just know that when the forces are ready to combine with this story, that this story will come on the screen and everyone will get to know about the woman Pope.
Well,
I'd like to change the subject just a little bit, and you also publish books. Don't you have a publishing house up there?
Uh-huh, we do. We do.
And I would like for you to share with our audience what you can tell us about your healer from Brazil, Jose, if you would just kind of walk us through the story of this man. And I believe he has like over 70 books and 6,000 audio tapes, and there's quite we won't have time to hear all about him, but just give us the indication of your experiences, you know, with him, and just let us look through your eyes for a moment.
Okay, well, I first met Jose Trigueirinho, is his name, and he lives in the back hills. It almost looks like the rolling hills of the Ozarks where I am here. It's in Brazil. You fly into São Paulo and go about 6 miles back into the country where he has a large community. They don't use the word community. They use the word monastery. He has a monastery. Brazil's a very Catholic country, and they use similar language. So they have this monastery, and they have men and women in separate quarters. You can go there as a guest. Their specialty is natural healing techniques. Jose writes. He has collected very capable people around him. He has a doctor who is a medical doctor who heads up all of the healing programs. He has persons like attorneys or professional people that have worked for a number of years and are hungry for a spiritual life. They quit their professional career and they attach themselves to the monastery. And so there's quite a body. There's probably about 100 people that are fairly close to them, but their ranks swell a lot. People from surrounding areas come there, and then they have a retreat once a year for medically inclined people, medically trained in any field, and they'll have a Friday night to a Monday night type of event where there'll be 1,000 medical people there, and Jose will speak and explain the ideas that he brings from spirit to be used in natural healing work. And when we get to the idea of walk-ins, the word Jose uses is monadic transformation, and he tells us that in August the 8th of 1988, he was taken to a particular place in Brazil by another man who was a spirit, spatial being, and that a process was done with him of cleansing his astral body and all of the emotions. And he uses the word best translated into English as washed and purified, and that he was then given his mission, and he began to build and first had a small teaching center in São Paulo and then was told to go out to this community. And the community is dedicated to all kinds, to massage, to nutrition. It's a vegan community. There's no sexual activity whatsoever. Married couples that go there do not stay together. If you're there on vacation or there for a couple of weeks, you stay in separate quarters, women with women, men with men. They want to keep the atmosphere as heart-centered as possible. And they discourage anything like competitiveness or an attraction to one another in a sexual kind of connotation or anything. They discourage a lot of ideas about private ownership. They are doing things in a commune fashion, and guests go there and make a donation. And you usually, you know, you might spend $500 a week to give, and that would cover room and board and any entertainment they did with you, anything. But you're not even told to do that. You're told to make a donation appropriate for yourself. And they make their own, what would be like compared to box flower remedies. They make a lot of essences. They grow their own herbs. They have a laboratory very scientifically set up where they dry and crush herbs and make powder. And then when fill capsules with these herbs and actually do a lot of community service in a little town near them. And they give away most of the herbs and they give away treatments. Everything is on just a donation basis. They have quite an operation down there. And his specialty, Jose's, is he speaks about once or perhaps twice a week to the group. Everybody does the work together. They have rest time, work time, and then meal times together. Go to bed at 9 o'clock, be very quiet, get up about 4 in the morning, and start their next day. So Jose will usually spend a couple of days with the people, and then other people will be selected. You'll be kind of assigned who or what activities are yours to do during the week. We always have gone into town and helped with a public meal. Once a week, they fix a public meal for all those in town that would like to come, which is usually quite a crowd. And they do social services type work in town. And when I was down there, I worked with a couple of people in the city hospital with death and dying counseling and kind of support for their families. So there's a lot going on. It's very different from the United States in every kind of way. Particularly, you enjoy chanting. They have about 3 times a day. I've forgotten. The first one might be about 5 o'clock in the morning, then in the afternoon, and then late at night. There's some chanting. There's a choir. They have a beautiful professional choir that sings occasionally, practices every day. But they have persons that they call these choirs singing somewhat like Gregorian chant. That is not Gregorian chant. It is their own keynotes that they have received from Spirit, and they sing them, and they call them the mantras, and they don't sing them in any known language. It is tones and sounds that have come through from Spirit and been captured and taught to the people to sing. And so they're singing these sacred tones, I might call it. If they don't teach classes, like we have an emphasis on classes here, they have an emphasis on the healing appointments there. And if you're not, you know, this is a totally different kind of monastery. It's a different kind of life, but it's a wonderful place to go to visit and to rest and just be quiet for a couple of weeks.
Seems like you mentioned something about that there's something special that happens concerning the immune system. Can you give us a little bit of information about what that entails?
Well, I don't know a lot about it. This is the one reason I'm hesitant. There is a process that they are developing, giving some shots that they have developed that I don't know what's in it, to persons to try to facilitate the building of a stronger immune system. And they are giving these to persons that request them for them, or unless your doctor tells you their doctor there should be the one to tell you, I'd like for you to take this. And I have had some of the shots. I haven't been back in a while, the last couple of years. I don't know what they would do if I went now. That's pretty much the way they operate. It's very quietly, not attracting a lot of attention, and not talking a whole lot about what you do. They are very much into silence, being centered, and keeping your experiences to yourself until it makes it kind of hard for you to really to really say what they're trying to do, because they never define it for you, and you have to kind of figure out what's going on. The doctor is homeopathic as well as allopathic. One time I was there and I was having a problem with my ankle, and they did take me into town and have x-rays made of my ankle. So they're not opposed to using allopathic medicine if needed, but that's not their preference. They are really into homeopathic and essences the most.
Okay. You mentioned the 8888. I know that was very, very special for me and some women that we had on the island of Aruba, and we had some very high experiences with some space beings at that time. Did Jose also have like an ET encounter on 8888 that you know of?
Well, he did say that he knew the person. He had been guided to this person and was told to listen to him. So this man got in touch with him and said, I'm going to take you to a special place and we're going to work on you. And this man was a special being. I do know, Jose has said that publicly.
Yeah.
So
okay.
He did take him there, and he did do the work on him there, and it was on that date. So it was contact with a spatial being.
Okay. So what about, did you have any sightings of ships in the area while you were in Brazil, or anything that you would say that might have been extraterrestrial in nature?
There's a mountain, they call it a mountain, it's a small hill, that is very charged with energy. And they go up there and do rituals ever so often. I don't know. They do one almost every time I go, and I don't know how regularly they do them otherwise. But I have been up there and watched the lights. And this is the one thing that Jose does say. Like, he wouldn't say, do you see the space beings? Or that would not be his comment. But he would say they are guided by the City of Lights. And the City of Lights is in the heavenly world, in the sky world. And so he talks more like that.
Yeah,
and
okay.
So I've been up on this hill with him, and I have seen all kind of lights in the sky, and I think that is what he speaks of, and there's kind of a cluster of influences. And I don't think he thinks, and, I, you know, it's always somewhat dangerous to say what another person thinks. But, as I understand it, he believes that it is a group that is working from space with the group at Figuera. And he believes that they are training and helping them for changes that will happen on the Earth. And they teach conservation. They teach respect and care for all life, all animals, all plants. They grow their own food. They're very independent at being able to take care of themselves. But he talks as if I could say it that way, the ones that are guiding the group are building rapport with them so that no matter what transpires on the Earth, Spirit will be there to help persons manage throughout it.
Right.
You know, that's really, they're very careful about resources. They're learning how to be as independent as possible, grow their own food, make their own herbs, you know, all of that kind of thing.
And you published his books. How many of his books did you publish for him?
I only published the one, Calling Humanity, to introduce him to the United States.
Okay.
But it is a compilation. When I wanted to publish it, I started reading his material. He had written so many books, short, small books, not big books. He'd written so many of them with a little bit of this and a little bit of that I wanted to gather it together and make one story. So I tried to take a chapter that he had written out of a number of different books and putting them together chronologically so that people would feel introduced to him and to his work.
Okay, I love the book. It's called Calling Humanity. And can they get the book from your bookstore or from your from your website?
Uh-huh, they can order it through Sancta Sophia bookstore. We have one, it's on the website. The books are listed, and they can be ordered there, or they can be ordered from Sparehawk Press through the mail if you'd want to do that.
Do you know of any groups that are getting formed to go to Brazil? I know that you said that you weren't able to go right now, but I know several people have been inquiring about going to Brazil to have this experience. Do you have someone that you can put us in touch with that would take a group down there?
I don't really at this time, and I'm hoping that by next summer I'll be able to do something myself, but at this time I couldn't, and I don't know of any group that is actively forming right now.
Okay, good. All
right. It's a good time to go, because remember that when you go to Brazil, as we go into the winter, they're going into the summer. You have to take that into consideration when you plan on going down there.
Yeah.
And their homes are not heated or cooled. They have a normal temperature range that doesn't need heating when it's cold or air conditioning. It's very pleasant. It does get cool at night. I slept under a blanket every night I was there. But in the daytime, you'd want sleeves if it was winter. You'd want shirt sleeves,
okay.
But you don't want a sweater. You don't need very much of anything other than the lightest of jackets,
right?
Even in the wintertime.
Right.
And then this summer you can sleep. Then you can bathe in pools, and they give mud baths, and they take sun baths, and you're exposed to nature much more than we are normally in our life, and it's a pleasure to have that experience.
Okay.
Sounds like it would be very transformational.
Yes,
it is,
I'm sure. Life-changing. Well, I noticed the time, and so we probably have some people calling in with questions or comments, and I'll turn it back over to you, Ariel, if you have something you'd like to ask Carol. And I know that Sierra is on our chat room, so I'll turn it back to you now. And thank you so much, Carol, for being our guest.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
But stay on so that someone may want to ask you something.
Okay, I will.
Okay. I'm going to talk to Sierra in the chat room right now to see what's going on there. Let me just get the... Hello, Sierra. Are you with me?
I sure am. How are you?
Good. Well, I'm glad to see you calling in, because that means the chat room is working okay.
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. Good. Do we have any questions for Dr. Parrish in the chat room, or any questions at all from you?
We don't at this time, but
okay.
Check back in. There is one question about earlier about Pope Jones. There was some chat about who actually impregnated Pope Jones. Does anybody actually know?
Yes, she's supposed to have a lover that was a monk or a priest that she knew, and he went to Rome with her and was an assistant to her. and was with her at the time that she went into labor, and actually if was the one, I believe, now I can't remember all of that story, but I believe he was the one either that helped them slip the baby out of Rome. I'm not sure what happened after that, but I know that he was the father of the child.
What a story.
It was a very interesting story.
Yeah. That would make a good movie.
Yes, it will. I'm hoping it'll come out that way.
Oh boy, what a blockbuster. Okay, well Sierra, I will check back with you in a little bit to see if we have any other questions coming from the chat room. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Okay, ladies. We've got about 40 minutes left. And I would like to ask Carol if you would. You have a couple of books that just recently came out that you wrote, and if you would like to talk about any of those.
I'd like to tell you first a very interesting thing about walk-ins that hasn't been mentioned.
Oh, good.
And I think the term walk-in was coined by Ruth Montgomery in about 2001 when she introduced Strangers Among Us, and then about 1970 when she introduced those.
It was really early, yeah.
Uh-huh. And she used the term to designate the exchange of souls when the builder of the body withdraws and a new inner self, another soul, assisted by the Lords of Karma, entered into the body to finish wearing it out, really, to use it as long as they could keep it together and to do a special purpose. But before that time, most people had never heard of such a term, and I wanted to give it the Rudolf Steiner talked about in the Gospel of St. Luke, his book, that when reaching a certain age, a human being could fall into a dead faint and the inner self would leave the body and a new inner self would come in and take over. And in 1920, D.K., Master Dwakul of the Tibetan, referred to the phenomena as a divine obsession. And he used that term, and he said it would become increasingly common in the years ahead. And that was a 1920 statement.
Wow.
Trigorino, as I said, calls it monadic transmutation. I like to call it soul exchange. But what it really is a messenger. And in Hebrews, in the Bible, it talks about, we entertain messengers unaware. And it means that we can, without disguise, that, you know, angels are messengers. When the Bible talks about angels, it doesn't mean anybody with big wings. It means a messenger. So when we have what people call walk-ins, I think we should call them messengers, and that they are trying to tell us some kind of insight or message that has come from the heavenly world to be delivered to humanity. And this is the part that generally has gotten lost. And so we just think of walk-ins as some kind of phenomena. Madame Blavatsky even told before her death that at that present time, as she was aging, that another body was being prepared for her. And as soon as this one was finished, she was going to transfer to that body. And Ledbetter talks about this in Masters in the Path. So I'm just pointing out some of the places where this information has been stored without getting a lot of attention, but it's there for us. And I know that, you know, I know that there's a lot more to it. One of the things that Lavendar said in the beginning was about parents knowing that some of their children are walk-ins. And I call them walk-alongs. That, you know, we have to think about our, maybe our husband or our children or our own parents, if we're the ones that's changed. Our parents go through, and our families around us go through a lot of adjustment. And so that's part of the walk-in experience, too, is how to love them and keep the families as healed as possible while all this adjustment is going on.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And, you know, I'm very, very aware of some of the nursing homes in the areas. Now, some of the original souls have gone on, and they have now walk-ins that are holding the light in these places that are not just holding the light, they're holding energy beams that go down into the earth above the town. And we have some very, very strong Pleiadians that have chosen to come and sit in these places, in these nursing homes all over America. And it's just been, I've been tracking this now for several months, and I'm almost overwhelmed to see what's happening from the nursing homes. It's one of the best-kept secrets on the planet.
Well, Lavender, can I ask, I know that the last Pleiadian lineup in November and then again in May brought a flood of new walk-ins, messengers, whatever you want to call these people. How do you think that's going to be affecting this coming Pleiadian lineup?
Well, I just think it's going to be, well, we have part one, part two, now we're going to have part three. I don't really know what the specifics are. I do know that it's going to be a huge upliftment. There's going to be a consciousness raising. It's like everybody goes to another level in November. It's the timing mechanism. It's, you know, it's kind of like our four seasons on the planet. Because Pleiadian lineup in May and November, it seems to tweak and raise the consciousness of those on the planet that are starseed and ready to, you know, to do whatever it is that they came here to do. So I've been watching the nursing home aspect, and I'm sure that it might be happening in other institutions and schools and hospitals. I mean, I've just been noticing the nursing home thing because it's something I'm tracking where I live and seeing, you know, when I go in and out of nursing homes, you know, I am greeted by all these Pleiadian walk-ins. So it's like, okie dokie. Right here in Oklahoma.
Right.
Well, I'm sure they're all over the globe because it's a massive job that's going on. And as you were talking, I was picturing this upward spiral that just keeps getting cranked, like you're going up a spiral staircase. And,
yes, that's the way I think all of these astrological lineups work. It's like they're steps.
Uh-huh.
And we keep saying they're shifts, but if you were standing at a staircase watching, it is like going up this step and then getting comfortable, or a certain percentage of the people getting balanced, comfortable at a certain location or vibration, and then another shift and another one. And we are actually raising the vibrations and trying to lift all of the planet up with this pull power that we're getting, to lift it up into a higher and higher vibration and lighter form. You
right.
know, it's more etheric all the time.
Right. Now, and I think that possibly, and Lavender, you can expound on this, because, you know, as we are going up this spiral staircase, we had just recently the 1010 activation for Starseed that we experienced in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And then right after that, we had the Sun at Galactic Degree in Libra, which you said was the balancing of the male and the female, which is something that's been cockeyed for quite some time now, as we all know. And as that prefaced this Pleiadian lineup, do you see it just like getting bigger, stronger, more powerful, more wide-reaching, getting another another boost?
Yeah, I think that the wisdom the starseed, you know, you're born with so many things in your system. I think your masterships from other lifetimes are going to come front and center automatically. I mean, you'll just wake up one day and go, you know, I'm not a Van Gogh, but I think I could paint like him, you know. Or you might have music, or just wake up one day and you just know how to do things. Maybe, you know, you flunked math in school, but all of a sudden, you know, you're this mad scientist that wants a chemistry lab. It will happen, you know, in many different ways. Or maybe you'll just wake up and go, well, I don't think I want to live here anymore. I'm moving. It'll be just kind of within a 24-hour period, I think that after the activation happens, if it really takes into the starseed programming and also the soul activation, because there's so many souls now that are going, you know, I think I made a contract with a group, but I sure need to find them. Well, I'm finding this in a lot of charts that I've been doing. Oh, goodness, the soul connections that I'm seeing. It's like I'm just sitting here in Oklahoma, and I'm finding people in Germany and in England and Australia and Canada, and they all belong to the soul group, and how are they ever going to come together? So it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll just figure out a way. So, Carol, don't you find that the soul groups are starting to magnetize together? Are you seeing this too?
I believe it is true. I think that we have just major issues, and I think child abuse, sexual abuse, addiction, materialism, emotional damage to people. I think these are all issues where people in each of these areas are finding help. They're coming together in groups, and they're all of them are really on spiritual paths, and I think that that's sometimes not understood, that in mysticism we're taught there's three ways that we advance in our spiritual life, and one is very slowly, and it's by regular prayer and meditation, study, and good companionship, staying in as high a vibration as it's possible for us to arrange. And that would be like the old-fashioned convent or monastery or even a dedicated church person. They really use their religion. Then there is the person that has a sudden experience, and we're talking about that in our near-death experiences or our soul exchanges or a sudden bright light that awakens people that happen with Kundalini experiences and such as this. But the third way to enlightenment is through the bardo, and most people do not understand this at all. And what our planet is going through is we're going through the planet as a near-death experience, and it is going through a bardo experience, and that'll probably last 200 to 300 years. And all of this pain-filled path is pushing masses of people forward, and they don't. Many of them do not even think they're on a spiritual path. They just are suffering, and it's physical pain, emotional pain, addictions, mental pain, grief, and so out of all of this, two things happen: the souls that are suffering so bad are having the bardo experience. And those of us that can help, whatever kind of help we can render, are called to respond to them. And instead of feeling superior to the persons having such experiences, we have to come to understand that they are our people to serve. They're the ones to reach out to, because we're guilty of neglect. If we think about all the things in the Bible about what we do about visiting the sick and taking care of the poor and all of these kind of remarks, it's our opportunity to render service, sacred service, to those persons that are on their bardo path. But our collective consciousness as a group of humanity is walking the bardo path, and a lot of people look with judgment in their eye at such experiences and they don't understand that it's not just a few people, but it is the collective of humanity that is suffering in such a way.
Oh, it's said so. You said it so well. That's just beautiful.
Thank you. It's my best understanding of what we're going through now.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been to Egypt? Have you encountered the trip to Egypt? I hadn't. You know, I never asked you if you've been.
Yes, I went a long time ago. I went in 1985, and took a group. It was one of my first overseas journeys. And some of the people that are still a part of my life and friendships, I met there and met in those early journeys. So I enjoyed my Egyptian experience, and really I'd like to go back just from the point of view. I'd like to see how much change I have done internally in the years that have gone on.
Well, the reason I brought it up is because I had an experience there with Bardo.
Mm-hmm.
When President Reagan was shot, we were in Cairo, and I went to Mahmoud, and I said, oh, we need the pyramid to pray for our president, and he closed it down for us, and I remember the French and the Germans yelling at us and cussing us out because, you know, we were Americans, and we were having privilege that day, and we went inside the pyramid, and everyone had a crystal, and we were told that to, you know, we had already been told that Brady had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we thought we were experiencing what some would call taking him through Bardo.
Uh-huh.
Well, the moment that we took him through Bardo, what we didn't know was in a hospital somewhere where he was laying, this blue light came over, and he came back to life.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And it was like... And that was the first time I really did understand the Bardo process, and it was one of those, you know, one of those big aha moments. And of course, later in, I'm telling some of my stories out of the vault, and that'll be one that I'll go into greater detail. But I just said, when you said Bardo, I said, oh, I remember the first time I was introduced to Bardo. It was you know, right out of this world. And there is a place in the bottom of the pyramid there in Cairo, Egypt, where this giant computer regulates the Bardo system.
Mm.
And that's what we were hooked up to. So I didn't know if you had any conscious awareness of Bardo being in Egypt when you were there or not.
No, I didn't. I really didn't. But I know the idea mostly from Buddhist teaching and... I've been in the temples in Mongolia and in Tibetan areas such as that where I've studied it, and I have had experiences of the Bardo in the taking people across and in the interplane experiences. And I tell people when they work in death and dying work not to be surprised at some of the things that happen that seem like they're so way out, they don't know whether to believe them or not, but that's just part of what happens with Bardo work when you're trying to be of help in that kind of a way.
Right.
And also, you know, now there's such a strong attention being directed toward addiction, and it's been neglected so much. It'll be interesting to see as more and more people begin to understand it's really a spiritual problem. And a fear of limitation and hopelessness.
Right.
And that, you know, if we can break that down, we're actually healing a part of the planetary astral plane when you do that. You're cleaning it up and you're bringing fresh vitality into these, and you do it as a people, but then it affects the astral plane as well.
Right. Arielle, do we have any callers in the, can you see the board?
Yes, yes, I can, and we do. Before we take some calls, though, I'm seeing that there are energies happening that a lot of people are just waking up. A lot of people are awake, and then it's like, okay, now what? People at different levels of evolution. And one comment I would like to mention from what you had said before, Carol, is that the more evolved you are, the higher frequency you carry, the more responsibility you shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the deal.
That's
now,
right.
Through our work with people doing starseed confirmations and starseed readings, I've spoken to a lot of people who, like I said, they're awake. They're asking the right questions. Some of them are having experiences that they can't explain, whether they're walk-ins or whether they are just coded to be awakening at this time. But there's so much uncertainty and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this the other day, and this idea came to me, and I think I'd like to do this now before we get into any answering questions from the callers, because we are kind of the clock is ticking here. I came up with this idea, and I'm calling it the Starseed Tool Belt, because I realized that there are certain basic, essential tools that every person who is awakening starseed, they confirm that they're a starseed, they think they might be, at whatever level you're at, I just got six things that I'm going to tell you about here. And there may be more, but this is what I consider, and Lavendar agrees with me, absolutely essential. If you don't have any one of these six things, you may not, like I said, it's like trying to drive a car with bad fuel and flat tires. You just might get there eventually, but boy, it won't be fun. The first thing on my list is silica, and we cannot stress this enough, not only because on a basic level, you need silica to keep your bones strong, to use calcium, but also to fight the electromagnetic pollution that surrounds us. We are all being bombarded and sitting in front of computers. Your silica is being depleted. Now, if you don't have silica, it's like on a starseed level, like you don't have any cell service. Your high command, the beings that are watching over you, that are walking with you and trying to keep you from getting too far off center, they can't communicate with you. If you don't have enough silica, they can't give you information. They can't guide you. So do them a favor, do yourself a favor, make sure you get silica every day. It comes in all different kinds of forms. We're actually researching a couple different forms that we've become aware of that are supposed to be the best you can get. But until we know for sure what we can recommend to you, just get something. It's better than nothing. Get some silica. And another thing that it helps with, and I hear this from Starseed all the time, is they're dealing with depression. And I have to say for myself, you know, it comes and goes, but it doesn't need to come at all. Silica will help to stop that depression in a big way, almost like someone flips a light. You know, if I forget to take it and I start feeling myself going down, I take silica and it's like, oh, boom, I'm happy to be here again, you know. Look at this beautiful world. And a lot of that, you know, depression comes from chemical imbalances and this depletion
right.
of silica. So without beating it into the ground, we must have our silica in our tool belt in order to function. The next big thing is cell phones. If you're a starseed and you expect to be effective and you want to accomplish your mission and you want to not go home feeling like you goofed, do something with your cell phone. Now, I personally spent months researching because I said there's going to be a product out there, but I only want the best one, the most effective one, the one that's been tested, proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. And the one that I came up with is the one that we have now on our website because I did the research. I saved you the time. But if you have some other way of, you know, protecting yourself from your cell phone, go ahead and do it. But if you don't do anything else, get a chip for your cell phone. They all different price ranges. The one that we are recommending is, I think, $39.95, and it's on the website. You can email me if you want to at ariel@starseedhotline.com, and I'll tell you more about it. But do at least that if you don't do anything else, because every time you put that cell phone to your head, you are not only mutating your DNA, but irradiating your brain. And we don't need brain-damaged starseed running around because you won't be able to do your mission. Another thing is microwave. Do not use or minimize as much as you can the use of a microwave. Don't get around it when it's cooking, and your food that's cooked in the microwave is not going to nourish you. That's all on the website. So electromagnetic interference is stopping a lot of starseed. The other tool for your belt, daily transits and planetary transits. If you don't know what energies are hitting you, how can you navigate? There's a company that we've been using for 20 years. We don't have any financial connection to them whatsoever. They just do a good job, and they're inexpensive. So call up Astronumeric, and let me get the – I forgot to get the number out for you. They have an 800 number. Let me tell you what it is. And then order your 12 months of daily transits. And, now I can't find that 800 number. Sorry.
Just get astronumeric.com.
Astronumeric.com. Thank you, Lavendar. And order your 12 months of daily transits. It's about $20, maybe $19 or something. And that will tell you day by day what kind of energies you're dealing with. And it's like a sailor going out to sea without checking the weather report. You're going to get into trouble. And along with that book, there's a reference book that you need to have. It's called Planets in Transit by Robert Hand. You can buy it. It's at any metaphysical bookstore, online. I'm sure there's tons of places. It's about $20 as well. You have these two tools to let you know what energies are affecting your life, what phases you're going through, when is the best time to advance, when is the best time to retreat, when is a good time for, attracting people or being alone. The fourth thing for your tool belt, you must learn about crystals. You have to know the proper use of crystals and understand their importance. Not only crystals that you would hold in your hand or have in your house, but the crystals that are in your blood and how they're programmed. So, and that's one of the reasons that Lavendar wrote the crystal book, because starseed need to know. Also, the fifth thing in the tool belt is our vault of knowledge. It's free. It's online. It's right there for you. You go to the website, click the vault of knowledge, and there's a lot of entries there that are things that you just really need to understand the big picture. Some of you may have read some of it, but there's dig through it, because it's not just there for looks. and especially in the vault is a long list of the starseed booby traps. Everything from food additives to, diet drinks, they all interfere with your brain. And we need to have our starseeds with good brains and good dispositions. We don't need you to be depressed and glitchy. And the last thing is about timing. Know where the moon is when you're doing things that are going to be important. And we have found a website. Again, we have no connection to them. They probably never even heard of us. But we use it all the time. It's called zodiacarts.com. And there's a place where you click on the for the calendar, and it tells you what phase the moon is, when the moon is void, of course, because if you want something to happen, you best not do it, go to a meeting or something when the moon is void, of course, because it's not going to turn out the way you want it. And it's also got some just really good information about knowing where the moon is, because it affects everybody on the planet. This planet runs on emotions, and the moon runs the emotions. So if you don't know where the moon is, again, you need to navigate your timing. And also pay attention to Mercury when it goes retrograde. You know, if you have a project or a mission or a goal that you're trying to accomplish, don't go into it without knowing whether or not Mercury is retrograde, because you'll have just all kinds of setbacks and you have to do things all over again. So, very quickly, that's the six things. Silica, EMF protection for your cell phone, your daily transits, crystals, all the information that we have in the vault, and timing by knowing where the moon is. And you can use the ZodiacArts.com website or any place that you go that has that information. But timing is very important. So, fit that out kind of quick there because we are running short on time, and I wanted to get it in there and still have time for some questions because we do have some callers with questions. So can we get to that now?
Yeah. Would you look and see if there's a 575 number showing up? Do you have 575?
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of, although I don't. I do have a question from a caller in the 240 area. Caller 240, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for either Carol or Lavendar?
Hi. Hi, Ariel. This is Will. I spoke to you yesterday.
Oh, hi, Will.
Hi. I was calling because actually I had a question about crystals right before you mentioned them. I began collecting a few crystals, I guess, when my awakening happened back in May. I just became, like, super obsessed with crystals. And, you know, my friends used to make fun of me because they're like, why are you doing all this?
Right.
I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I just need them. They're little batteries. That's all I would tell them.
That's right.
And,
I just say, you just go with that. And, you know, you're just popping wide open. You know, in 6 months you've come a long way. But you do need to know about the crystals and pretty much everything you need to know about crystals.
Yes.
There's like 55 points to know about crystals, and they're all in Lavendar's book.
Yeah, I actually, right when you mentioned it, I was like, I'm going to hop online and try to order that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's only $3, so you really can't go wrong.
No, but I mean, as far as the crystals go, like, specifically, I have been picking up some that I've been kind of getting a glitch, I guess, to pick up, and I noticed lately that they have really weird, like, symbols. Some of them have triangles going up,
mm-hmm.
Some of them have them going down, some of them have dots, some of them have, like, lines that look like computer chips, and one of them is shaped like a key. And I mean, no one told me this, but I think they're from Brazil. So I don't know, like, exactly how those work, like, if there's any, like, advice you can give me for those.
Well, each crystal that you mentioned has a different function, so whether they're record keepers, you know, some are healers, they're all communication devices and amplified energy, so be very careful around crystals. But you'll enjoy the book because it will cover, I'll answer a lot of those questions for you. And if you have any additional questions, you can always join our forum at starseedhotline.ning, and you can ask more questions there. We're going to try to get through now. We have callers with other questions, so
yeah, no,
I'm going to kind of try to get through this
crystals
quickly here. Okay,
yeah.
Will, thank you so much for calling in, and if you don't find what you need to know, you can always post on the forum.
I'm sure I'll be fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thanks, Will. Bye-bye. We have another caller from the 501 area. 501, you are on the air with your question or comment.
Hello?
Hello. You're on the air.
Hi, I guess that's me. This is Joan. I'm in Arkansas. That's why it's not showing up as 575.
Oh, well, congratulations, Joan. You made it.
Whoopee. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, this is Lavendar, and Joan, I just want to say how proud I am that you sold your house. You didn't sell your house. You put your house up for sale. You quit your job. You took another job, came across country, called me. I met you. I spent 2 days with you, and it was just absolutely wonderful meeting you. And then you went on to Sparrowhawk Village, and you got to meet Carol Parrish, and you got to see the Sophia Sanctuary over there. And so I'm glad that you called in. I did want to say, though, that we had an experience happen with us when we were up at Quartz Mountain Park, and I'm just going to tell this, Joan. I was giving her some Giza crystals, and I put purple salt in a little bag, and then I put the Giza crystals in, and I had them in an envelope, and the envelope was, you know, closed. And I looked on the bed, and there were like 7 Giza crystals on the bedspread. And I thought, well, how'd they jump out of that envelope? And so I went ahead and opened up the package, and I was handing her the Ziploc baggie with the crystals. But the purple salt was now white, and all the purple was gone out of the salt. And I thought, boy, this is really something. And Alicia, who sent me the salt, when I got home, I found out that her father had died.
Oh.
And it was like, what just happened here? I still don't have, I just know that this is one of those, you know, just strange happenings that they're connected somehow, but I'm not really sure. So, Joan, go ahead and say whatever you need to say about, you know, coming through Oklahoma.
Oh, well, it was a wonderful trip. I really enjoyed spending that time with you. And I when I went up to Sparrowhawk Village and walked into that church, it was just an awesome experience because I felt more accepted than I have ever had walking into a church.
A church is a chapel.
Yes, but they call it a church.
It's really a chapel. We among ourselves, its name, you know, church is a name, and it means a valuable assembly.
Okay.
And that's what the original word meant. And when they had small church groups in the homes, it was a very powerful assembly of people with a like-minded. And then later it became a word for a building. But we in the village call it our chapel, and formally it is a church, and it has an outreach to ordain people and to be a spiritual home for them. And I'm so glad that you enjoyed it as you did.
Oh, I did very much. The balance is what I felt so deeply.
Mm-hmm. And that's our intent.
Well, wonderful that you got to have that experience, and we wish you all kinds of wonderful experiences to come in your new home in one of the most gorgeous places on the planet and most powerful places. Yes.
I just wanted to tell you, too, when I looked for Astronumeric online, I had a problem finding it because it's Astronumerics with an S.
Oh, thank you.
And I have the 800 number.
Oh, thanks, Joan. Go ahead.
It's 800-627-7464.
800-627-7464.
Yes.
Great. I appreciate your doing that. I had
okay.
It sitting right here and it went away.
I'll get off and let the next person ask their question.
Okay, well, we only have time for one more and just barely one quick question here. Thank you so much, Joan. And
thank you.
Keep in touch with us. We want to hear how it's going.
I will.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. We just had time for a quick question from 914 area. Do you have a question for Lavender or Carol?
Hello. Hi.
Hello. I'm fine.
Hi. This is Susan. I'm in New York.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Before you start, Susan, let me just say that we may not be streaming after 1 minute, but this will still be recorded, so it will be on the archived version of this conversation. So, continue.
Oh, okay, thanks. No problem. I just wanted to say thank you, first of all, to Lavendar and Ariel. Lavendar, you gave me a awesome reading a couple of months ago, and I have to send you an email and let me know how everything has turned out. But I had a really quick question. We talked a little bit about astrology, and something I've been looking at recently, and I wondered if you ever worked with the asteroid Magdalena?
No, but you know, I think I'm probably going to start working with it because all these women are showing up with all these Magdalene star markings that I've been tracking. They've been reading the book, The Expected One, by Kathleen McGowan, and
right.
And here they come. So
yeah.
I'm really interested in adding the asteroid Magdalene. I think it's going to probably show up somewhere. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Oh, yeah, you should
Thank
definitely
you.
Look at it. I've been looking at it, and it's really pretty amazing.
Okay.
Oh, we will. We will. Thank you so much, Susan. Well, we just have about 20 seconds left here. Thank you so much, Dr. Carol Parrish, for joining us. Lavendar, as always, I love what you have to say. And this is Arielle Taylor, and we will see you next Tuesday, same time, same place. Thanks so much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.